Back together again, you and I, with a brand new week on a Monday, January 22nd, 2024, on Connecticut Today. We featured a preview of the second Bridgeport Democratic mayoral primary for former State Rep. Chris Caruso. Connecticut News Junkie and Substack.com blogger Terry Cowgill stopped by for his weekly update and chat. And I also had a few thoughts on the national political scene as well. All right, back to open phones momentarily. We are in hour number three of our daily four-hour get-together. Great to have you with us at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Welcoming in one of our go-to people, political analyst Chris Caruso, former Bridgeport Democratic state rep, a candidate for mayor. Chris, as we go into Ganim v. Gomes, round three, primary number two, as the great Lindsey Nelson used to say on Mets games, if you're scoring at home.
It's the gift that doesn't stop giving, you know?
Yeah, and again, Chris, as was brought up by Melissa on the debate this morning, and I hope you had a chance to hear it, you have now the Secretary of the State, Stephanie Thomas, who's probably wondering, Chris, why the heck did I take this job? I could have stayed in the General Assembly and have foregone the agita. Oofah.
Yeah.
But now she's concerned enough, Chris, with, I guess, 1,400 absentee ballot applications, not ballots, though, we should say, and that she, what did she do now? She alerted the Elections Enforcement Commission, right?
Yeah. And, part of the problem is the Elections Enforcement Commission is understaffed. You know, when we created that whole entity, which we did with, say, public finance, we provided adequate staff. And over the years, the legislature has trimmed that staff down to their investigative side is very minimal. So from what I understand, they have been inundated, Paul, inundated with so many complaints that all they're doing is they're logging them in. So that's part of the problem. That's why it takes quite a while to investigate. There's no on-the-spot, arrest or things like that that should be happening, but you can't do it because you don't have the ability to do it. Some of those cases should be referred to the state's attorney's office, who has the prosecution side of judicial, and they can prosecute those cases. And I don't know if they will. That's part of the problem. Again, what we've said before, unless there's a consequence, a strong deterrent, which means arrest, which means prosecution, which means conviction, these problems will persist. What's happened is in Bridgeport, and even in parts of the state, but Bridgeport, because that's the topic today, it's become part of the system to do absentee ballots. It's just as if years ago we encouraged people to go to the polls. Now we're encouraging people to do things by absentee ballot, to vote by absentee ballot. And as long as that takes place, the fraud is going to happen, the thievery is going to take place, and it's going to continue. I was having coffee with a gentleman the other day who actually had a video of a person going door to door picking up the ballots. Literally taking them from the voters, putting them in a pouch, and I guess they'll mail them, in the future. Now,
which is against the law, correct?
Well, of course it is. Of course it is. Yeah. Even you can't be in the room or overseeing the ballot at all as a political operative or a candidate or anything like that. You can't be there when the voter is voting, executing the ballot. But it's done all the time because now it's become part of the system, of the political system. And so Lord knows where that person is going to take those ballots. They're not going to take them to the drop box. They'll probably take them to the post office box and drop them off there. So, the problem persists. And it's great to have monitors. That's super. Great idea. Super idea. But you know what? They're limited on what they can do. And unless the legislature steps in and says, listen, in the future, there will be no political operatives, there will be no individuals working with candidates that are allowed to distribute the applications, the problem will persist. And if there's no consequence, the problem will persist. It's like when I passed the legislation revoking the pensions of those public officials or elected officials found to cause a felony and then are convicted of the felony, they lose their pension. And that's what takes place. That has been a strong deterrent from much of the corruption we've seen. Has it been perfect? No. But go talk to the people who lose their pensions. Yeah. Some have lost 50% of their pension. Some have lost 90% of the pension. Go talk to them and see what the turn that is and the consequence.
So, Chris, tomorrow, now, there's supposed to be some rain. It could be a little windy. There could be a little icing here and there. But it appears that most voters, Chris, they want to, they can vote at the polls. In fact, there is a provision, and I know Melissa was talking about it a few times earlier today, where if you're worried about this, you could actually, rescind your absentee ballot. And if the weather's good, you can say, no, I'd rather do this at a polling place, right?
That's right. Yes, you could do that legally, right? The other thing is if a voter went to the polling place and, you know, was unable to go into the polling place for whatever reason, ice or whatever, one of the moderator of the school would be notified, the person who's running the polling place, and they could bring the ballot out to the voter and have the voter execute it. For example, if someone is disabled and it's difficult for them to get into the school, but a family member take them to the polling place, you would request that of the moderator, the person running the school for that election. And then that person would bring out the ballot, allow you to execute it, and then it would be brought back in and would be added into the count. So there's that option, too, because, you know, with the elderly, with the ice, it becomes dangerous. But there are a lot of elderly people that want to go out and vote and definitely want to partake in the process. I'm going to go, and I have a friend I'm taking to the polls tomorrow as well, you know, to help them. You know, Paul, this is so foreign to me in many ways. I've been in Bridgeport in two years will be 50 years that I've been involved in the political process in Bridgeport. Believe that, 50 years. It's hard. Since 1976. I don't know what the hell I did all those years, but anyway, why I did it. But no,
you're like the people in radio. It's 40 years for me, and we keep looking at each other going, what in the hell are we doing here? Yeah. But anyway, good for you, 50 years, But you look back on it and you say what?
Well, you know, listen, I would do it all over again, Paul. I loved elected office. I loved helping people. I loved working with my constituents. I loved it all. I just wish there was, you know, in Bridgeport, you spend more time opposing bad things than you do encouraging good things, unfortunately. But, you know, with my effort against corruption, with my work on community organizing and fighting for people in the city, I would do it all over again. However, in that time period, Paula, when I was running for office, if we had 50 absentee ballots, 20 sometimes, like in my state report, that was a lot. And, you know, the people just wanted to come out and vote. They'd get offended. I remember one person was with a walker, and I said, well, you know, if you want an absentee, it's legitimate. You have a walker. You can't walk that far. She looked at me. She said, until the day I die, I'm going to the polls.
Good for her. Good for her.
But today, Paul, what's ended up happening is it's become too easy.
It's too easy, Chris. Look, we've crossed that line of saying, well, okay, if you're out of town, military service, religious reasons, infirmity. Yeah. Now we're encouraging it, Chris. And you and I talk about this all the time. I am so frightened by the fact that we're essentially going to go to mail-in balloting, no excuse absentees, without adding any proper layers of security. I mean, that frightens me.
Yeah. No, it should, Paul, because, you know, the biggest challenge I have is that those that are opposing changes many times are incumbents, the people who directly are affected by the changes in the system.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what began. Listen, when I was pushing public financing in the legislature, it was people from my own party that opposed me. And they get so angry with me. And some would come up and say, but this helps my opponent. And I said, but this is what you've been pushing for years. These were the progressives, you know, the liberals. This is the argument. But I was fighting with them. So, you know, and it's all because of incumbency protection. Everyone thinks you have to have protection to be an incumbent or you won't get reelected again. And I told all of them, I remember a dear friend, the minority leader of the Republican Party, Larry Caffaro. And Larry was opposing the bill. And I said, Larry, there's nothing to worry about. If you work hard as a legislator and your colleagues do the same, the voters will put you back in again.
Yeah.
Unless you do something wrong and do something illegal, unethical, they're going to put you back in again. regardless whether you have public financing or you don't. I said the ones who have to worry are the lousy legislators who don't do anything.
Exactly.
And people know who they are. I said, because then you can get an opponent that's going to run and put up a good case on why that person should be removed, and chances are they will be removed. And sure enough, dollar to donuts, Paul,
yeah.
I can point to those legislators that lost that weren't doing their jobs.
Because they were invisible, because nobody ever saw them, and you couldn't get a hold of them, right, Chris? They don't return phone calls, they don't return emails, and then they sit there and they wonder why they lose. Chris, in the couple of minutes we have left, what is the, I don't know whether you have new batteries for it, whether you turned it on, the Caruso crystal ball for tomorrow.
Oh.
What is, what is it saying?
I think the actual vote at the polls is going to win it. I think it's not going to be absentees. I think tomorrow you're going to have a good turnout. That's what I'm gauging. And I also think it's probably going to be a win from either one by 200 to 300 votes.
So a tight race here. All right. We'll see.
I think it's just going to be like the rest of them. But I think with this one, the difference is it's a court-ordered redo. And I think people have seen that, and there's been enough issue about it. So I think the polling places, you'll see more people. And with the 39 degrees is not bad, Paul. Apparently that's what they're projecting. Not too bad, you know?
No.
But the ice will have an effect, things like that.
Yeah,
you know?
just do a double shot of Anisette in your coffee and everything will be, you know, before you...
you know, Paul, I don't know how accurate my count is, but for the last three or four now elections we've had in Bridgeport, I predicted 200 to 300 in each one.
Okay.
So maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong, you know?
All right.
But my hope is this, Paul, for either candidate, because I'm not endorsing either one, my hope is that people come out and vote. I really pray that they do it, because if they do come out and vote, then there's legitimacy to it, and it says, okay, this person is the candidate, you know, a duly elected by the people of the city. And I think it's time for Bridgeporters to set the course the right way and to come out and vote. I think it's critically important, you know?
Absolutely. Apathy is the worst thing. Chris, thank you. We'll talk down the road. Be good, my friend. Take care.
Take care.
All right. Former Democratic State Rep, mayoral candidate as well, Chris Caruso, predicting, as Chris said, and I've kind of read this in other spots too, maybe this time, it doesn't mean you're voting for one person or the other. If you're pro-Gomes, anti-Ghanem, pro-Ghanem, anti-Gomes, doesn't matter. Just do your voting, if you can, at the polling places. As Chris said, remember, there was a time when the use of an absentee ballot was relatively rare. And that's the way it should be. And I'm telling you, folks, and I'm going to watch this like a hawk. Do not, and I'm going to say no, you can vote however you want, but don't get wooed by everybody in Hartford who's going to say, don't worry, there'll be plenty of security. When we, in a sense, when they try to go to no-excuse mail-in balloting. Now, other states have done that, but they've taken 3, 4, 5 years or more and have had a very transparent and open process about upping security. If you don't see that in Connecticut, vote no. Don't worry. The world will go on. People will still vote in Connecticut. Stop with the disenfranchising. I'm hearing that all the time now. And relax. All righty. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. That is the number. If you want to check it, we'll get back to open phones momentarily. But it's a Monday. Yeah, it's coming up after 5:15. So why not check in with one of our go-to people, our Monday spotlight, of course, Terry Calgill. He reports and blogs at the Connecticut News Junkie, ctnewsjunkie.com, and also look for him on substack.com, Red Meat for Mushy Moderates. Mr. Calgill, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm fine. I'm still suffering from the trauma of the governor of Florida withdrawing from the presidential race.
I guess, Terry, in the past couple of cycles, relatively well-educated, articulate, somewhat successful governors of Florida, which is a solid red state now, for some reason, Terry, they don't appeal to the Republican base. It's just, I don't know. This guy, Terry, who did his undergrad stuff at Yale, played baseball there, and did his grad stuff at Harvard, was a good enough lawyer to be in the JAG Corps, and is running a state where a lot of people move to. I guess the Republican base, Terry, would not have somebody like that. I don't know. Fill me in.
Well, I think the problem is the elephant in the room is Donald Trump. So he's very popular in the Republican Party, or at least people say they like him, including a lot of politicians. But, you know, DeSantis really never came up with a strategy to be the Trump slayer that everybody thought he would be. And his strategy was essentially to say, I'm younger, I have more energy, and I can get more stuff done because I got a lot of stuff done in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And Donald Trump is, well, you know, I appreciate what he did, but, you know, he's kind of old. He's kind of sort of old. He's kind of sort of blurts out a lot of things that he shouldn't. And that was his message. And when you're that far behind, the only way to make, you know, that's why there's negative advertising. Everybody says they hate negative political advertising, but it's done because it works.
Yeah.
And it's the only way you can chip away at your opponent's armor, especially when he's leading so far. And so you have Nikki Haley and him, and their criticisms, I think, have been rather tepid. And, you know, you can't win a race like that with tepid criticism when you know, you're behind by 30 points or whatever. So.
Yeah, and I wonder, Terry, when I saw he dropped out, I said, I don't think VP is this, you know, does he want to be attorney general? Does he want to be like a treasury or a commerce secretary? Yeah, he spent $160 million, but there's got, unless he wants to wait 4 years or 8 years, he's a young guy. So I wonder if there's been talks about, hey, you drop out, and if I win, you get to be this, which you and I know happens.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly possible. It has happened before. But he, you know, he was just, don't forget, I mean, he was just reelected governor of Florida in 2022.
By 20 points. By 20 points.
Yeah, by 19, 20 points. And, you know, which leads me to say, and I said this when other governors have run for president too, what was, in the last, you know, 6 or 7 months, he's been visiting all 99 counties in Iowa. How can you be governor when you're doing that? So, yeah, I think it's very difficult for him to do his job. I think it was difficult for any sitting governor to do his job when you're because let's face it, being governor is hard work.
Yeah,
it really is. It's real work. Being in the Senate, not so much.
Oh my God!
You could, I think you could easily be in the Senate and run for president because you're not going to miss that much. All you have to do is fly back and vote.
Yeah,
you know, you can't vote by proxy. But being a governor, I mean, that is really hard work. You know, maybe he should go back and be a really good governor. He's going to be term limited out, right? So you can only serve two terms as governor, just like being president. So if he runs again, he could go back and he would get it would be 2026 when his term would be up, and 2028 would be when he would run for president. So then he could spend, you know, there was 2 years building an organization, building a ground game, and going in, and he wouldn't even have to put up with Donald Trump.
And listen, Terry, it could happen. Everybody thought Richard Nixon was done after 1960. Everybody said, oh, that Reagan guy, he's done after 1976. Look what happened. My problem with this whole thing, Terry, would be 99 counties in Iowa. How in the hell does Iowa have 90? Not like, but what are you? If they came to me and said, sir, you have to visit 99 counties, I said, forget it. I'm not 99 counties.
God. Well, it sounds like a lot of bureaucracy, but they probably don't, in a lot of those rural counties, they probably don't even have town government, really.
Yeah.
Really, the county takes over. But, I mean, New York, the state of New York, and it's not a small state geographically or by population. The state of New York has like 61, 62 counties, something like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't understand 99 counties in a place like Iowa. It doesn't make any sense.
And, Terry, now you're starting to see, it's interesting, Nikki Haley held back for so long, And, you know, maybe she said, you know, in so many words that we can't use on the radio, you know, blanket, I don't want to be VP. She said that. And she probably won't be now when you consider that she's basically spent the last few days telling Republican voters, okay, vote for Trump, but he's losing it. And he confused me and, you know, Nancy Pelosi on the stump the other night, which could be interesting tomorrow, although I doubt it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and that's the thing. A lot of people, I think, rightly point out that Joe Biden seems a bit out of it at times, and he's an old guy. He's even older than Trump.
Mm-hmm.
But lately, Trump has been getting up there, and these troubles occur when he goes off the teleprompter and starts musing. And, yes, he basically said that Nikki Haley, you know, was in charge of security at the Capitol on January 6th, and you know, we offered to give her 10,000 people, but Nikki Haley wouldn't do it. She wouldn't take it. And, you know, you look at that and you just say, well, this guy is obviously losing it. I don't think he would have done that 2 or 3 years ago even. So I think that is a problem. But most of the Republican base doesn't really care. They still get this visceral enjoyment out of him. And I don't see anything happening. I mean, unless something, you know, health-wise really happens to Donald Trump, which is certainly possible when you get at that age, either one of them could drop dead tomorrow.
Yeah, I am sure, Terry, and I've said this before, I'm sure, although it's probably three people know it and they're sworn to secrecy, I am sure that both parties have a plan B, even beyond the procedure, which everybody knows what happened to the convention if a candidate became incapacitated, but I'm sure they have some names possibly lined up. Terry Cowgill is the guest. Terry, you've been having an interesting back and forth regarding an idea from a Fairfield County Republican legislator, Ryan Fazio, who's been on this program a lot from Greenwich, about taxing endowments of rich private schools, which I find fascinating. And you got a response from another former legislator on this. Tell people about this.
Yeah, two state senators were involved in this. Most recently, John McKinney, whom you probably know well. I'm an admirer of John McKinney. I've often said, you know, I think he should run for governor. I think he'd make a terrific governor. But Ryan basically says he'd like to. He's writing a bill that would tax the endowment income of the largest universities in the state.
Mm-hmm.
He has his eye on two or three of them. Of course, the elephant in the room is Yale. Everybody mm-hmm. knows that Yale is the largest and has the most money. And actually looked up the rankings, the endowment rankings in Connecticut. And Yale leads at $31 billion, which is not a drop in the bucket.
How do they get by? How do they get by on just $31 billion?
Well, and so, and then it drops off very sharply from there, as you can imagine. And you want to venture a guess at which is number two?
Two and three. In some order, I'm going to say two and three. Two and three. I'm going to say, Terry, one of them is Wesleyan?
Yes, that's my graduate school alma mater, Wesleyan University.
Okay.
It's number two and at $1.1 billion.
And number three, oh, wow. I'm going to take a stab on this one, a wild guess. Conn College, Connecticut College in New London.
Nope. They're down at number six. Number three is Wesleyan's arch rival athletically, and that's Trinity.
Trinity, okay. Yeah, I got you.
$614 million.
Okay.
So those are the ones that it looks like he's eyeing. And, you know, and I told him, I said, and I did a column on this for CT News Junkie, in 2016, because somebody else, another politician, was talking about taxing Yale. Yale's status as a nonprofit in Connecticut
mm-hmm.
is actually written into the state constitution.
Yeah,
which seems ridiculous, but you know, back in the 18th century when they were writing the constitution, I guess it seemed like a good idea. And you know, all the Yaleys had an awful lot of influence in the state government. So yeah. that would require a what they call a legislatively referred constitutional amendment, so that you have to put that before the voters. It's the only thing that goes before the voters, the only referendums that go before the voters in Connecticut. We don't have ballot initiatives like not a lot of other states do.
Yeah.
So that would be a problem. But then John McKinney basically says, well, yeah, so what happens with, you know, all the other colleges? How about the prep schools like Hotchkiss and Choate? You know, once they have hundreds of millions in their endowments. And then what about the churches? You know, they're nonprofit. The Catholic Church has more money than probably any of the Connecticut's universities.
And there's always Terry, there's always a second collection to fix the roof on the sacristy. I don't get it, but anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's right. Yeah. Well, it's too busy paying off all of these litigants.
Well,
that too.
Yeah.
Problem. Yeah. Exactly. So that was interesting, I thought, and I don't know the bill number, and I'm going to try to get that from Senator Fazio and look at it closely, and then maybe I'll have another report next week on that.
Excellent. All right, Terry Cowgill, thank you. Terry, good to chat with you. Terry is at the Connecticut News Junkie and also at Substack.com, his column there, Red Meat for Mushy Moderates. Terry, thanks. Stay close. We'll chat next week. Thank you, sir.
All right. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Yeah, was I wrong? Hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo! Brothers and sisters out there in talk. Man, oh man, was I wrong. Ron DeSantis, see you later. Yes, you heard me many times tell callers, kind of in jest, tongue-in-cheek, to get ready for President DeSantis. And I guess the Republican base doesn't like really smart governors of Florida. For some reason, a state that has morphed from a blue state to kind of a purplish red state to now a red state over the past several years under Ron DeSantis and Jeb Bush. I guess for some odd reason, conservative policy and people who are really smart, those kinds of governors, I guess, for some odd reason, don't resonate with a very angry Republican base. I don't get it. I don't get it. Now, listen, Ron DeSantis was not the perfect candidate. He would come over as smarmy sometimes. He would come over as that kid you went to grammar school or high school with or junior high or even college who knew all the answers and you just wanted to... But I would have thought, and look, maybe Mr. Trump's going to win. I don't know. This is a gamble. But I would have thought, and again, maybe I'll be wrong and I'll be shocked if I am. I would have thought the Republican Party may have, in these 4 years under Joe Biden, have looked and said, geez, all we have to do is sound like adults in the room. Not name call, not, you know, call men and women things and then laugh at it and say, hey, look at Joe Biden. I mean, my God, we could beat him with a batting practice pitch. I guess not. I have no idea what's going to happen. I just don't. But Ron DeSantis is out. Tim Scott is out. Doug Burgum is out. Vivek Ramaswamy is out. And man, oh man, does Donald Trump, even approaching 78 years old, and now, I don't care whether you want to hear it or not, the reports over the weekend of him starting to confuse people, confusing Nikki Haley with Nancy Pelosi and everything, I guess that's what you people want. I guess that's what you people want. And you may sit here going, oh, here you go again. Well, yes, here I go again. Now, is Donald Trump going to win? Maybe. Maybe he will win, depending upon what his vice presidential pick will be, because there might be enough people who say, geez, Joe Biden is too damn old, and I don't want Kamala to be president. That's what it's going to come down to. So who he picks for vice president, I don't know. Is it going to be Ron DeSantis? You know, DeSantis went through part of the campaign saying, well, I'm not going to be a number two, this, that, and the other. They kind of all say that, although Nikki Haley has said that. So, I mean, I don't know. He's talking about Elise Stefanik? Really? She's got no resume. She's got no resume. Kristi Noem has a resume. Carrie Lake is a nut. Don't pick her. She's out of her mind. She was a big Obama person at one time. But man, oh man, the Republican Party, I hate to use this phrase because I want to win so badly, but man, oh man, this really is kind of a, and again, in some ways, I can't blame Donald Trump. I mean, if I was him and people love me the way they love him, and again, I voted for the guy twice, but you know what? Like a good sports team, you got to shake up the lineup. But, man, it's approaching cult status. It really is. It really is. And I'm listening to him, and fine, he sounds fine on the stump. But we're going to do this, or we're going to do that, and we hope to do this, and I'll make sure we do that. Well, guess what? If you don't have majorities in the House and Senate, which might not happen if the down-ballot damage continues, I don't know where we're going to end up in a year, year and a half, 2 years, 3 years from now. But I'm not uber shocked that Ron DeSantis is out. I mean, he spent like $160 or $170 million. And again, when a lot of voters are angry and they want to simply get back at Democrats, even though they've been trying that for the past 4 or 5 years, not working too well. I can tell you that. Don't get mad at me. Look at the results. By the way, if you get mad and scream at me and use curse words that we don't get on the air because of our digital delay here, so don't even swear when you call in because it's not going to make it. Take a look at how Republicans have done post-Trump. And you tell me if the direction is the proper direction. I just want to, you know, as a guy that thinks the Democratic Party's out of its mind, most people, I'd rather a few Republicans win, maybe the Republicans we used to have under Ronald Reagan, maybe under Richard Nixon. Geez, I don't know, Bush 41, Bush 43. Even in the early Trump years. But, man, you've got people running out of Washington like crazy now because I think they sniff what's coming. And all of a sudden now, isn't this interesting? Ever since Ron DeSantis dropped out, and it looks like Nikki Haley's going to do okay tomorrow. She may get in the mid to upper 30s, maybe 40%, but she's still likely to get thumped. What are we seeing here? In the Hill today, Senate GOP fares drop in Trump enthusiasm. Senate members say there's less enthusiasm for former President Trump among Republican-leaning voters compared to 2016. Why are they saying that? I guess they're seeing some of the exit polling coming in now after a week or so from Iowa. Now, think about that. I know it was cold. Everybody is saying, well, it was cold. Yeah, it was cold. But, I mean, come on. You're not walking to caucus places. And suddenly, everybody's starting to, on the Republican side, says, hey, wait a minute. And this is, like I said earlier, this is one of the faults of our system. On the Democrat, on the Republican side, or for that matter, on the Democratic side, you can carry a bare majority of a low turnout, and suddenly you're king and queen and emperor and princess and all that. Just 15% of Iowa Republicans came out for the Iowa caucuses a few days ago. 15%. You're telling me that's because of the cold? Where you can set the tone for the country and maybe the leader of the free world, you only get one chance to do that every 4 years. Once every 48 months. That takes a little doing, right? And only 15% came out. What does that tell you? Lawmakers acknowledge the weather was a factor behind the low turnout, but point to other signs of diminished enthusiasm for Donald Trump. Something, it says here in the Hill, that could hurt down-ballot Republicans in swing states. What have I been saying for the past 2 years? I could be wrong. I hope I'm wrong. Because let me tell you something. Any more time of Joe Biden, forget it. And face it, when you're voting for Joe Biden, and this, you may be fine with this, but you're voting for Kamala Harris. Just remember that. If you're voting for Joe Biden, you're voting for Kamala Harris. It's not rocket science, but it's interesting now. Isn't it? The day after Ron DeSantis drops out of the race, and we're heading into the day that could maybe make but likely break Nikki Haley and, you know, hand the coronation, the crown to Donald Trump, all of a sudden you got these House members and these Senate members saying, hey, guess what? Yeah. Huh. This might not be a good idea. Now they're saying it because they suddenly have grown gullions. Excuse me for the female members of Congress. You have a set of them rhetorically. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. Some Senate Republicans hope that Trump's problems will be balanced by low enthusiasm among Democrats for Joe Biden. Don't bank on it. I've said it all the time, and I'll continue to say it. Democrats don't do circular firing squads. They don't. They do not. They do not do circular firing squads. And you know what they do? They unite around certain key issues. Now, when we come back, after we check traffic and weather together at the bottom of the hour, I am going to play a campaign spot that just hit today. Now, again, don't doubt me on this. Because a lot of these commercials, these campaign spots, and the one I'm going to play for you, are going to air in swing states. And it's a campaign spot on abortion. What did I tell you? The moment it looked inevitable that Donald Trump was going to be the nominee, they've got all this, both parties do it, they've got all this stuff pre-scripted, pre-produced, and standing by. You are going to hear the words choice, women's health care, abortion over and over and over again. And I'm telling you, it's going to move female voters and younger male voters who may not be all that thrilled with Joe Biden. But you know what? It'll move them more than the immigration issue will. It just will. It'll move them more than the economy will. It just will. Now, if the Republicans were smart, and they're not, because they like to engage in the circular firing squads and everybody wants to be the hero and they'd rather be the loyal opposition, even here in Connecticut. We've got some big dummy Republican voters here in this state, I can tell you. But a lot of Republicans would rather be the loyal opposition than actually unite around somebody and turn out and vote. Now, might I be wrong about November? I sure could be, and I hope I am. But again, coming up in just a bit, I want you to stay here because you're going to hear 60 seconds that is going to become the theme of the campaign that you and I are going to hear for about the next 10 months.